call to order. I want to welcome you to the Paradise Town Advisory Board meeting dated March 11th, 2025. Can we all stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All board members are present except for Renee Wantas. And then can we get staff introductions?
Juan Velasquez, Flood County Commissioner, who gives us office.
Board of Fagley Commons Planning.
And then we'd like to inform anybody here, we're glad you came to participate in this board meeting. And these are some of the things I'd like you to know before we start. Items on the agenda may be taken out of order. The board or council may combine two or more agenda items for the consideration. The board or council may remove an item from the agenda or delay discussion relating to an item at any time. No action may be taken on any matter not listed on the posted agenda. All planning and zoning matters heard at this meeting are forwarded to Board of County Commissioners Zoning, BCC, or Clark County Planning Commissioners, BC, for final action. Please turn off and mute all phones during the meeting. If you have any private conversations, including the applicant or our guests, the public, please take it outside and you can come right back. We have no problem with you leaving and coming. And the next part is the public comment period, which is devoted to comments by the general public about items on this agenda. No discussion, action, or vote may be taken on the agenda item. You'll be afforded the opportunity to speak on an individual public hearing item at this time they are presented. If you wish to speak to the board or council about items within its jurisdiction but not appearing on this agenda, you must wait until the comments section to the general public period listed on the end of the agenda. Comments will be limited to three minutes. Please step up to the speaker's podium. If any member of the board council wishes to extend the length of the presentation, this will be done by the chairperson or board council by majority vote. Can I get an approval of the minutes for February 25th, 2025?
Chair, I'll go ahead and make a motion to approve the minutes for February 25th, 2025.
There's a motion on the floor to approve the minutes for February 25th, 2025. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Can I get approval for the agenda for March 11th, 2025?
Chair, I make a motion to approve the minutes for tonight, March 11th, 2025, with no changes.
There's a motion on the floor to approve the agenda for March 11th, 2025. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? And we're going to move to the informal. Do you have anything, Blanca? Informal?
No.
Okay, there's nothing to do. We're going to move on to the agenda. Item number one, UC250079 Botch Property LLC use permit to allow retail and a principal use of conjunction with an existing shopping center of 2.0 acres in an IL industrial light zone. Generally located on the north side of Bell Drive and the east side of Argyle Street within Paradise. Is the applicant here? I guess we will trail that to the
end. I make a motion to trail to the end of the meeting.
There's a motion to trail to the end of the meeting. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, we're going to move into applicant number two, which is, are they here? Yeah, okay, I thought you were. Is it okay if I read them all together? Okay. PA 250005 Bridge Counseling Association Incorporated Plan Amendment to redesignate the existing land use category for public use PU and a neighborhood commercial NC to the court mixed use CM on 3.88 acres generally located on the west side of McLeod Drive, 300 feet north of Rochelle Avenue within Paradise. Item number on the agenda, item number three, NC250084 Bridge Counseling Association zone change to reclassify 2.60 acres from a CP commercial professional zone to a CG commercial zone, generally located on the west side of McLeod, 300 feet north of Rochelle Avenue within Paradise. Item number four, UC250085 Bridge Counseling Association, Inc. use permit for the following. Number one, a hospital, and number two, a multifamily residential development. And then we have a waiver of development standards for the following. One, eliminate electric vehicle capable and install parking spaces. Number two, reduce buffering and screening. Number three, allow attached sidewalks. And four, alternate driveway geometrics. The design review for the following is a hospital expansion, and the multiple family residential development is conjunction with an existing hospital on 3.88 acres in a CG commercial general zone, generally located on the west side of McLeod Drive, approximately 300 feet north of Rochelle Avenue with Paradise.
Good evening. Liz Olson, 1880 Festival Plaza Drive, here on behalf of the applicant and property owner, Mrs. Lissamo. I can talk loud.
Can you turn that off?
Or we can, if you want to talk. Is it not working?
So the, again, Liz Olson, 1880 Festival Plaza Drive, here on behalf of the applicant and property owner, Bridge Counseling. Bridge Counseling is and has been operating on this site since 2019 as a hospital. The application that's before you this evening is for an expansion of that hospital to allow a children's facility as well as multifamily. One clarification before I move forward is our plans do note on our multifamily portion that this is transitional housing. This is not transitional housing for release offenders. This is strictly multifamily development in conjunction with the existing hospital. David Brobeck, who is the CEO and president of Bridge Counseling, is also here with me. After I go through the application, I'm going to have him quickly give a more eloquent overview of how the multifamily and the children's facility will work in conjunction with the hospital that's operating today. So the site, as you can see here on the map, is located just along McLeod, south of Flamingo here, north of Rochelle. It's just under 4 acres, and the hospital is located in the center of the site here, and again, has been operating since April of 2019. To the west of us is CCSD-owned property. Those are their offices for various office uses. We have Walgreens to the north of us here, as well as a vacant piece of property in between that. Office to the south, as well as some additional CCSD office property to the east across McLeod. The site is currently master planned public use and neighborhood commercial. So the bottom here being where the existing hospital is located, as well as the bottom here, is the neighborhood commercial, and the top portion is planned for public use. Public use is obviously no longer going to be used here now that it's privately owned. Public use is typically for schools, parks, community centers, etc. And the site is currently zoned CP to the south, which allowed that hospital use with a special use permit back in 2018. And the northern portion is currently zoned CG. So our first portion of our application is a request for a master plan amendment and a zone change. The master plan amendment, we are requesting to go from the public use and the commercial neighborhood to what's called under the new zoning code as corridor mixed use. Under the old code, the neighborhood commercial would have allowed us up to 18 units to the acre under that commercial zoning designation. Under this new master plan designation, we have to have that change to allow for up to 18 units to the acre. We're not requesting up to 18, but just so you can see here, that is the reason for the master plan amendment. And then we are requesting to rezone the bottom portion of the site to match the top to have the CG zoning here, which you can see is permitted under the corridor mixed use. So into our site plan here, As you can see, this is the existing building, which is currently operating, Bridge Counseling is currently operating in. We have two expansions that we're looking at. The first is an existing building here in the north or southwest corner of the site. It's currently like a warehouse building. This would be transferred and changed into the 16 units for the children's facility. And David will go into that a little bit more. And then here over to the northeast would be our multifamily portion of the project, which would be a total of 52 units split in between either two-bedroom or one-bedroom for a total of 100 beds. So overall, our density is just over 13 to the acre, which is comparable to the other existing multifamily developments just to the east and to the west of us that are at around 18 units to the acre. So we have a few waivers on the site that I'd like to go through. As you read through the staff report, staff is in support of the majority of our application. They believe that these are significantly needed uses in our community, which obviously is a very true statement. And they are also in favor of the majority of our design. They do have some concerns with a couple of our waivers, which is why they recommended denial on other portions. But as you read through the staff report, they do essentially support most of the application. So let me go through it quickly. So the existing building will stay. The first waivers that we have to do with our landscaping cover. So along the west and to the north, we back up to public use zoning, which requires the 15 feet of landscaping and an 8-foot wall. The intent there was to protect uses, as I mentioned before, schools and parks, community facilities. These properties to the north and to the west of us are essentially operating as office uses, but they are zoned PF, public facility. If these were zoned as office, the 15 feet of landscaping and that 8-foot wall would not be required. So staff is supportive of our landscape waivers here. We are adding 10 feet of landscaping to the north. Again, there's actually vacant property directly to the north of us before you get to the Walgreens. But we are adding 10 feet of landscaping that will enhance the overall property and provide some additional shade, as well as providing a little bit of extra landscaping here on the northwest portion of the site. But again, we back up to essentially what is an office use here. Along the cloud, we are providing anywhere from 10 feet to 53 feet of landscaping. So significantly landscaped in this area. We're providing about 10 extra trees over the entire site than what is required. So we're trying to add as much as we can while also keeping what's on the site. Waiver number two is EV charging. So we have requested the waiver for EV charging simply because our patients don't drive. I know that we do have staff, and staff in the staff report mentioned that, but the majority of people who are coming and going from the site do not drive, so we'd like to request that for now. Waiver number three is for our attached sidewalks, or detached sidewalks are required. The reason we are requesting that waiver is so we can keep all of this beautiful mature landscaping. If we have to tear out our land or our sidewalk here, we would have to tear out these trees, put a new sidewalk in, and then put new landscaping in front and back. We would really like to try and keep this, and we are meeting the intent of the code with the landscaping, as we are providing, again, anywhere from 10 to 53 feet of landscaping where detached sidewalks would require total of 10, 5 and 5 on each side. And then our last waiver that we have relate to the existing driveways on site. We're requesting to reduce our throat depth here and reduce our radii on all of our driveways. These driveways have been in place for quite some time. As you read through the staff report, Public Works is okay with our request here. We have removed some of our parking in this area here to address Public Works' concern on the throat depth in this area, because there were some additional handicap stalls in this space. So we removed that. We'll put some have landscaping or pavement here to increase the growth up there. But overall, Public Works is okay with leaving all of the driveways as is. So again, I appreciate staff's time and work on this. We will be updating our plans, as I mentioned, to remove that transitional notation. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to David, as I mentioned, just so he can quickly give you an overview so you can really appreciate what they are doing here and that they're going to bring to these uses.
Good evening. David Harbeck, ROV, CPA, 1640, also thank you for your time. I appreciate it very much. We have been operating, a hospital sounds like such a big word, much more than my parents had anticipated for me to be the administrator of. But anyway, basically we do outpatient treatment. This is mental health and substance abuse treatment, and we're probably on treatment as well. And so we have had a great success. We've been in operation as an agency since 1971. We are a 501c3 nonprofit agency. And we have treated in the last 10 years over 20,000 clients. During that time, we've had no suicides, which is a remarkable thing considering how prevalent suicide is among the people that are getting seeking treatment here. The Children's Wing, the Children's Wing is literally, the Children's Wing is just for children, 17 and under. So they could be in for outpatient treatment with us. It's been a long day. It's going since 5 this morning. So,
can I just make a suggestion?
Yes.
That's an omnidirectional microphone, so you should probably speak into it this way.
I'll try to pick up. Thank you. So, 17 years and younger. And so, that means if we have a child that comes to us for outpatient treatment and they're inappropriate for it, they need a higher level of care, we'll be able to move them to that area because it'll be a residential outpatient treatment. They'd be in there whatever time is appropriate for it because everything's client-centered, so maybe a week, maybe 3 weeks or 4 weeks. And we'll be getting schooling when they're in there, though. That's one of the requirements, and we would absolutely insist on that as well. The nice part is there are no psychiatric residential treatment facilities in Southern Nevada. Everything is controlled by the state. There are a couple in the north, and what the state typically does, or the county typically does, is moves them out of state for treatment. So that means that families, if families want to be engaged in the treatment, they have to go find a way to get out of state to go be with their child rather be treated. So this would be an improvement. It's only 16 beds. We definitely will get more than 16 children an entire year, 80 to 100 children perhaps at the most. But we will be treating this. It's a new operation for Southern Nevada. It's something we truly need. And for the apartments, those are 50 apartments, and it's basically for moving them through. People that are working with us on outpatient often don't have good apartments to be in as they get out of their treatment or they're going through their final stages of treatment. So they'd be moving into those apartments. We're looking at anywhere from 6 months to 12 months is all they would be in there. Because our goal, when we're working with these clients in their outpatient treatment, is not to get them on the state welfare roll or to get them public housing. It's permanent housing, permanent jobs. We're actually quite successful at doing that now. I think this is one of the areas, obviously, with the housing shortage we have right now. It would give us a few extra apartments to get them through there. But it's not a permanent place for them to stay, but it's also not a short-term thing. It's going to be, it's connected to the building so that you can continue their treatment as well.
Thank you. Okay, turning it over to, now that they're finished with, we're going to turn it over to the public. Is there anyone here that wants to speak on this agenda item? No one? Seeing no one from the public, we're going to open it to the board. Does anybody have any Oh, close it to the public, I'm sorry. Okay, and open it to the board.
Your clarification about the apartments was very helpful. It makes it more of a in-house treatment center versus, you know, you're not renting out apartments as part of the hospital. So as far as your waivers, you know, when you look at them, there's a lot of them, but I don't see any of them that I could insist that you go forward with. The detached sidewalks, the whole area is attached. I think that code really needs to apply to new places, not trying to force oddball off-site sidewalks. And then as far as your throat drives, there's very low traffic going into the center, so you're not going to have cars backing up, pulling in there, so I agree with that. So it's, I don't see any on all three applications. I'm okay with all of them.
I have a question on the design review. The only thing you showed us was an overview and the existing building. I don't see, what is the housing going to look like?
So two stories here, maximum height of 29 feet, so under that 35, which is typical for two stories, but we try to make it modern looking, but also have those changes in the design to avoid one big building.
So it's totally out of character with everything else that's here, is basically what you're saying.
We can certainly look at changing it, but yes, this is what we have.
Of character with
well, if you look at the neighborhood, okay, that is extremely modern. And I'm not saying that we have to keep building what we currently have. And we do have new building in the area that complements the area, but it has a modern look to it, but not straight line like that is.
Understood. Yeah, we'd be happy to look at it.
Yeah, I'm sure you would. And I have to disagree with the meandering sidewalks. I mean, I understand this is an older neighborhood, but older neighborhoods will never improve and they'll always look the same and continue to go down because we don't upgrade. And that was what I understood when we had zoning changes in the past, which we've had quite a few in the last few years, where nothing changes. Still the old sidewalks, still the old, you know, and some of that is good and some of that is bad. But for the east side, nothing ever changes. And you never get upgrades, but you hardly ever see it. It can take you out and drive you on many streets and tell you that. So I still have a problem with that, but it's not a showstopper really, but I don't know when. As a community on the east side, we're going to start to update our east side. And we've got areas with bad streets, we've got no street lights, you name it. And then we don't want to put in anything new. And then you want to put in something that is totally different than anything I've seen on the east side so far. So maybe that is an upgrade. I don't know.
Did you have a neighborhood meeting?
We did, yes.
So did you show the site plan to any? So let me ask a really quick question. Is anybody here from the public on this item? Okay.
We are.
So when I open it to the public, just so you understand, if you wanted to speak, I just want to make sure, and I'm glad you're listening and we're getting it all out there, but during that public meeting or neighborhood meeting, did anybody object to the building type? Can you raise your hand that you don't like the design of it?
Oh, no.
The design. Okay, so we're just right now the design. Then I have another question. How many of you are here to support it? And how many are here to object?
Can
Can you be on the fence?
Can you hold your hand? Well, you can or not, but that's fine. You can go either way. It's your choice. But can you raise your hands really hard so we can get a count?
I'll go that way first.
Okay.
What'd you get? 10?
I got 10.
Okay.
That's your opponent.
Yeah.
There's no one here in favor of it?
Well, one on the fence.
Four.
Oh wait, there's one more. Five.
I'm just a little surprised. You're all here. You took time out of your evening to come here and
it's very
see
hard to hear.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Great.
Yes.
Thank you.
So I'm a little surprised that you didn't have anything to say.
Well, we did.
Because
I kind of
would like to get a feel.
Sure,
you know, this is
sure.
out of character, because you've already told it to the public.
Yeah, the rattling of papers, that went so fast, and they said, oh, that was supposed to be the public. So
I apologize for that, but I said it twice, but I understand yours. I'm kind of new at this position, too, but I appreciate you guys being here. So my question is if... when they spoke and gave you, did they answer a majority of your questions? Or are you just opposed to the thought of a new addition to that property for traffic, for any other reasons? I mean, if I can get one or two people, I just want to hear the basics.
And did they know about a neighborhood meeting?
Yeah. Were you all at the neighborhood meeting?
Yes.
Okay.
We were notified of the neighborhood meeting. We were not notified by postcard for this one.
Yeah, well, that's...
Would you be willing to do
another
neighborhood meeting?
Well, the neighborhood meeting, they presented different, it had nothing to do with this. It was about outpatient services and 220-plus beds coming in.
Okay, so but now that we're here, and what they present... Okay, this is how it works. They come to us. We're an advisement board. We do our vote after we hear all the public and that. And then it goes to... planning or the commissioners, and that is the final vote. So those, you will have another opportunity to speak, and I would say if you're going to speak, those are the, I mean, we'd love to hear from you, but if she and the gentleman, and I don't know where he went, they tried to explain exactly what we hear, and that is what they're held to. Once this is passed through the final stages, that's what they have to do. So what she's presenting and what he presented is what is actually proposed at this time. The waivers is just the three. The reason it got confusing is a lot of it was, and I can reread them when we go through and we do the motions. The waivers are just difference of landscaping and stuff like that to improve it. And just like my chair said, or my said, he would like to see it improve the area, and I believe like he believes. I believe if we keep doing this where we have developers come in and build in an area and not want to improve it, it leaves everything. I'm in an area where I'm having that issue constantly. It's like, you know, maintain the commercial property. So my concern is like his. This is very large where it's going. I mean, it's very large. Mm-hmm. And
can
so,
I clarify one thing?
Yes, go ahead.
So, to clarify the 220 plus beds for homeless or whatever listing that was. So, this was a flyer that went out before the neighborhood meeting that I'm not sure who sent it out. And it walks through our first portion, which is the children's facility, the second portion, which is the multifamily, and then the very last portion down here says 220 to 260 overnight beds for. Homeless. So that may be, we try to clarify that at the neighborhood meeting, but that is obviously not a portion of this, and this was some misinformation that went out. We also sent this over to the commissioner's office, so he was aware. But we did discuss the multifamily and the children's unit.
Okay.
And
the confusion.
Try to clarify that
okay.
This was not part of the notice.
This is.
Can I just add one thing?
Okay.
You can ask.
I can ask? Okay. My problem is the way we have to do it, once I close it to the public and I closed it, it doesn't go back and forth. We cannot do that. That's why I asked if you went to the neighborhood meeting, because that was a time that you could have engaged in the questions. You could have asked all the information that you were being told or not told of the project. My best and I guess you could correct me, is that we'll do our procedures here and vote on how we see the waivers and the applications with the presentation, and then you, I would advise that you go to the next stage and make sure, and I would recommend that you get like kind of a committee together and have a person speak on what your issues are, because it's important that someone hits all your either your likes or your dislikes, and it's very important that you be heard. And like, I apologize if you did not, I thought I spoke very clearly at that stage. So we're going to move forward with the board making either a motion or discuss more. I don't know if you have anything.
So we're moving back to the board.
We're moving back to the board. So if you have a question to the applicant.
I don't necessarily have a question. With my colleague here, I'm not hung up on the waivers. I think that the need, the community need that this project is going to be supporting is kind of comes first. We keep hearing throughout this legislative session the need for beds for kids, and especially with mental health. I think the needs for these kids come first more than electric capable parking spots. That's my opinion on that, but I support this project and I commend the good work. So that's all.
Does anybody else want to?
No. Listening to what the public has said so far and what we have in front of us, and I think it should just move on to the Planning Commission.
So do we want to make a motion on agenda item two at all? We'll do two first.
So I'll make a motion to approve item number two, which is the plan and amendment to redesignate the existing land use category subject to staff conditions.
Okay, there's a motion on the floor. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And that goes on to Planning Commission is April 1st, and then we're going to make a motion on the zone change.
Make a motion to approve the zone change to reclassify from commercial.
Can I ask everybody to quiet so then you can hear the motion, please? Thank you.
To reclassify from commercial professional to commercial general, subject to staff conditions.
There's a motion on the floor. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Okay, now we're going to go to the use permit. This
and
is
then the item number four, I make a motion to approve the use permits, all waivers of development standards and design reviews, subject to the staff conditions.
There's a motion on the floor for item number four to approve with motion with staff recommended approval. What'd you got? I say it one more time.
No use permits, waivers of development and design.
Okay, so there's a motion on the floor to approve waivers of development standards and design review use permits.
Subject
to staff conditions. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed?
Thank you.
It's in my head. I know, I've got to be number five now. It's going to kill me.
You were very close. And as we all look at it, they're all here, and you're not going to say anything.
Okay. We're moving on to item number five. And I know you're here. I'm going to read, and we're going to read. Ready? UC 250125 Tropicana Land LLC use permit for the following: recreational facility, live entertainment. Vocational training facility, office, 5 outdoor dining, drinking, and cooking, 6 outdoor market, and mobile food vendor. Waiver of development standards for the following: 1, eliminate and reduce street landscaping, 2, reduce electrical vehicle charging spaces, 3, reduce loading spaces, 4, allow off-site temporary construction activities, and 5, modify driveway geometrics. Design review for a recreational facility ballpark on 35.11 acres in a CR commercial resort zone within the airport surrounding overlay. generally located on the north side of Reno Avenue and the east side of Las Vegas Boulevard, south within Paradise.
Good evening, Jennifer Lasvich, 1987 Gold Plaza Drive, here tonight on behalf of the athletics. Before I get into my presentation, I do want to introduce a couple of people in the audience to the board. These people are experts in areas where maybe I am not, and so if I can't answer a question that comes up, I know that they can. So starting with Mark Dang in the back, he is the president of the athletics. Next to him is Sandy Dean, who is a representative of the ownership group. Right here in the very back also, they like to sit in the back row, is Devin and Emily. Both of them are from Kimlinghorn on any traffic issues that he might have. And then also towards the back is Brad Schrock, and he is the director of design. I have other people here too, so I do have an army of people to help me if I can't make it through this presentation. So here in yellow is the location of the project. It sits on Tropicana and Las Vegas Boulevard. This is the former site of the Tropicana Hotel. This gives you, of course, we know this area well. It's the Strip, so all that area is master planned for entertainment mixed use, and then the pink indicates commercial resort. So, as I mentioned at the very beginning, this is going to be an integrated site. In this part right here, which is towards the southeast corner, that's going to be the proposed ballpark and the subject of the application that's before you tonight. Right here in this corner along Reno Avenue, that is the proposed 2,500 stall garage. And then in the gray around us will be the integrated resort, and that application will come before you for its own public hearing. But it's meant to be an integrated resort in addition to the ballpark. We have a number of waivers, and so I'm going to kind of go through and show you a lot of pretty pictures, and then I'll come back and do the waivers. But I'm sure you've seen the news. The idea of this concept is a lot of bouncing arches, kind of from the idea of a baseball pennant. They overlap each other for a maximum height in this location of 320 feet, which also includes antennas or any kind of thing on the top. So the overall height is 320 feet. And this is a much better picture of what I just showed you. It is a rendering of what the ballpark would look like at night. You can see in this area some windows. That is intentional, which you'll see as I get into the renderings of how this would look and function during the daytime. But what's important about this is that it's completely enclosed. It's climate controlled, and it's a completely enclosed ballpark. This, I learned a new term today, what looks like scales, it turns out that the technical name for that is a metal dragon scale room. And what I like about this particular exhibit is that it shows you up close what the material of that outside is going to look like, and then you start to see these clear story windows, which will let some natural light in for daytime games. This gives you an idea. This is, as you look at it, you would be standing to the north, looking to the south, and you'd see this large window right in front. That's a two-way window. You can kind of see from the outside looking in and the inside looking out, which you'll see as we keep going. But it gives you an idea for how they're bringing the outside in to an otherwise enclosed and climate-controlled ballpark. Now you're sitting on the inside. You're watching a game, and as you look out, you can see the Strip and beyond in the daytime with the light. You also start to get an idea of the scale of this, and the overall size is 30,000 fixed seats, but there is room for up to 3,000 standing room. And so this picture also gives you a sense of the closeness and the more direct feel that you'll have to the ballpark. That was done as an intentional design to the field, so that you could really get, as a fan, that closer feeling and closer experience when you're watching a game. So leading along that, this is the bullpen seating experience. This is where pitchers warm up, and you see how close the fans are to either the home pitcher or the visiting pitcher, and the interaction that can occur there. This picture gives you an idea. It says main entrance, but that's the concourse, and so there's some concessions that sit behind, like maybe where I'm standing. But what you can feel from this picture is that connection and interaction between, if you're not just sitting in your seats, if you go up to get a hot dog, because that's the American thing that you do when you watch baseball, is you gotta have a hot dog, you will be able to still have connection to the game and be able to see it live. There'll also be screens, but you'll be able to still see into the to the field itself. This is that concession area, we call it the Upper Concourse Marketplace, so that gives you a feel of what it would look like as you go into the concession area. And then I'm kind of back to that home plate picture. So now I'm going to move back to the site plan to approve some of the waivers that you have. So I'm just going to go down them. I think I can move through them relatively quickly, but waivers 1A and 1B, this is the corner of Tropicana and Las Vegas Boulevard. As you know, there are pedestrian bridges there today. So we have a waiver to eliminate landscaping in and around this area because you actually can't put it in. There's already an existing condition there. And so that includes waivers 1A and 1B, which staff is recommending approval of. Waivers 1C and D, that talks about the overall landscape widths along Las Vegas Boulevard and along Tropicana as well. And both of those, it suggests that we don't have enough landscape, but if you go in and you look at the analysis, we actually have some landscaping that's in the right-of-way, but you can't count that towards the required landscaping. So when you add that together, you either get to what code requires or a little bit more. And both of those waiver staff is also recommending approval. 2A and B deal with EV-capable charging and EV-required spaces. We are asking to eliminate the requirement for all of the EV-capable charging spaces. Again, that deals with our 2,500-space garage in this location. We are, though, indicating that we would like to put in 75 install EV-capable parking spots. So we would be putting that in. That is under what code would require technically. And so that requires the waivers on 2A and 2B, which staff is recommending approval of those. Waiver number 3 is to reduce the number of loading spaces. That's done on a per square foot basis, and so there's an awful lot of square footage inside a ballpark. And operationally, we know we don't need 39 docks, but we know operationally we can make it work with 3 loading spaces where otherwise 39 would be required. Staff's also recommending approval of that. And then waiver number 4 is allow temporary construction activities to occur off-site. What we mean by that is there could be a time where we're asking for that waiver across the site, but if there was some future mapping action and we had some staging areas, say in the gray area, for the purposes of construction of the ballpark, that's why we asked for it. It's an abundance of caution just through construction, and then we wouldn't need that anymore. As it relates to, which I won't go through, but all of the waivers from Public Works, I'll hit a couple of highlights and then I'll show some other slides. So we do have, as the Tropicana site, we have a number of existing driveways along Tropicana as well as along Las Vegas Boulevard. With the development of the ballpark, on the far east side, we are going to put in a dedicated fire lane that will stretch from Reno Avenue on the south to Tropicana Avenue on the north. Again, that's not meant to be in combination with anything. It is for emergency vehicles only. And then down here on the south part of the site is really the main vehicular entrance into the ballpark experience because it's the closest area that you can get into with the garage. So I'll show you in a minute how we reconfigure Giles to allow for a lot of traffic movements in and around this area. While I'm showing this picture, I do want to indicate that we are building a pedestrian bridge over our own driveway. So pedestrians that may need to cross in this area won't be at grade level, that will be above, so you'll have that free flow of cars. So there are a number of waivers that the staff report calls out relative to throat depths or like widths of driveways or things of that nature. And in all cases, the analysis from Public Works was let us analyze this through the traffic study. The traffic study was submitted, even though it's a condition of approval and it usually comes after any type of final action. In this case, we submitted the traffic study and event management plan back to Clark County in October of 2024. So they have had it. We are having continuous dialogue with them, particularly on the event management side of it, because that's really, you know, how is this all going to function on an event day? So that gives you an idea of what the waivers are. Now I'm going to go back. So starting with, I think the two things, the last two topics that I want to cover is traffic and parking. As it relates to traffic mitigation, I think it's important. I have very complicated maps that I can show you, but we all talked about it and thought that maybe a bullet point makes more sense, and I can go back to that complicated map if there's any questions. But for starters, we're going to realign and increase the capacity of the existing signalized intersection between Reno Avenue and Giles Street. We're also going to do an additional point of ingress and egress into the property. We're going to widen Reno Avenue to the north. What that means is that along the full length of the Tropicana site, we're going to dedicate an additional 18 to 23 feet of property that doesn't exist in the right-of-way today to become future right-of-way or existing right-of-way once we develop, in order to get some additional lane and traffic movement in that area. We're going to add additional median improvements on Reno Avenue that will help with stacking for turning movements. We're going to expand right turn lanes and left turn lanes. We're going to widen the pedestrian walkways, and we're also going to be constructing a new bus stop on southbound Giles. So this is a good exhibit, I think, to jump to right now. This gives you kind of a bird's eye view of what is Reno and Giles look like in its current condition today. This is where the Tropicana site is right here, and this gives you that interesting turning movements and kind of a side, non-technical way of me saying it, offset intersection. But what you do have, as you move along Giles northbound, you have these two clear lanes that kind of run this way. All of these arrows indicate the different turning movements. But what's important to point out here is right in this area and right over in this area, it's actually right of way. That when we looked at how to improve the traffic flow over here, we were able to make improvements within the existing right of way. So this shows you what that would look like. We straighten, so instead of having everything that kind of curved this way, we straighten it up, and you have more of a straight intersection, but you maintain that clear flow or free-flowing right that you always had on Giles towards Reno Avenue, and all of these arrows indicate the different turning movements and additional lane, that's that additional lane that we talked about, that will be added on the north side. My last point that I wanted to cover deals with parking. So as you note in the report, we don't actually have a parking waiver. Under new Title 30, what it allows uses of any kind to do is you can work with a traffic engineer, and they have to study what we call parking demand. It has to be stamped, certified, it has to be turned into planning. But it kind of says, what do you think your use needs, and how will you meet that need on your site? Kim Linhorn has prepared that parking demand study. We have turned it into the county. So you have a section in your analysis that talks about the parking, but it doesn't address it in the front part as a waiver, which you may have had me come to you in the past and talk about it in those terms. What we like about this exhibit is that we went out and studied 30 different MLB ballparks across the country. There are some that lean more urban, and we would say that where the A site is, we put that in more of the urban category. And then there are a number that we would put in the non-urban category, and we can talk through those, because I'm sure if you have a question about any ballpark, somebody on my team has been there and studied it. But this particular exhibit in yellow, well, first let me start here. What this column says is how many fixed seats do those stadium or those ballparks have? And then when you get to the yellow, that talks about team-dedicated parking spaces. So right at the top is our ballpark. We said 30,220, as I mentioned, it's a 30,000 fixed seat, and then we have those standing room only. So we kind of chose a number that has everybody sitting down plus a few more. But what the yellow shows is that's the 2,500 stalls that we are going to build that on game and event days, you're going to be able to park in and have available exclusively for the game or the event. The green is what is the number of parking spaces that are available in the general broader area. And as we studied this, there is certainly a science and a thought process that having more distributive parking that is a little bit more spread out is actually better for not only the person coming to the game for that game day experience, but also for the traffic in and around wherever the ballpark the ballpark has a game going on. So around us, there's roughly 46,000 parking stalls of some kind. That can be in other resort hotels, that can be in privately owned property that are non-resort hotels. We've done it within, I think it's about a 20-minute walk. It's about a 20-minute walk to the ballpark from the site. That's how we quantify all of those stalls. Now, we can pick anyone, but just for fun, I'm going to pick the Arizona Diamondbacks because I think that there are fans of that team in this room. So the Arizona Diamondbacks sits down here. That's actually a very large ballpark. It has seating capacity for 48,000. And while they have more parking spaces than we do on site, just under 4,000 dedicated, it's about 60% bigger than what our ballpark would be. And then green, you see that they have about 10,000 parking stalls, you know, not dedicated, but around the site that are available as an opportunity. So I'm just pointing that out because I know we have a fan in here, and I'm hoping at some point it will be a house divided between the Diamondbacks and the Athletics. That'll come down the road. But this, you know, happy to go through these in more detail. I can talk about Dodger Stadium if you wanted. Interestingly enough, we didn't view, and I know I learned something, we did not actually view Dodger Stadium as a urban stadium, which seems unusual to say because it's effectively near downtown LA and you can't get more urban than that. But when it was built without anything around it and a sea of parking. So for us, that's just a different ballpark development than what we have here, where you've already got development all around you and you're coming in and putting more of that urban development. So we can talk about that, and we did analyze why that was different, even though you would think it's urban. That's why we didn't actually categorize that one as urban. So anyway, this shows you, we think that we are providing more than ample parking on site, but again, working with property owners in the surrounding area to do what I'll call off-site parking arrangements. Obviously, those will, it would be helpful to have those in place, I think beneficial to those property owners to do things like that. And we believe it'll still be a great fan experience, and you know, from that walking side of things. So I appreciate you letting me explain all of this to you. I'm going to pause my presentation, and I'll go back to the very beginning or put up a pretty picture. And then I will be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, we're going to open it to the public. Is anybody here to speak on this item? Please state your name.
Hi, I'm Jason Gray, Vice President of Government Affairs for MGM Resorts International. I'll be brief considering the late hour, but I'm here on behalf of MGM Resorts to state our support for the land use application before you, 25-0125. MGM Resorts, just for background and context, is a global entertainment company that includes a portfolio of 31 unique hotel and gaming destinations internationally, including the large-scale resorts located at three of the Four Corners on Las Vegas Boulevard and abutting the proposed stadium site. As not only a major operator within the resort quarter, but a direct neighbor of the proposed stadium to be the future home of the A's, our support for the project goes back to the 2023 legislative sessions. We believe the project will serve as a major tourism asset and will further amplify our destination status as the sports and entertainment capital of the world, while catalyzing development along the South Strip corridor. The proposed stadium site is appropriately designed and configured at a site that is master planned for this type of use, and the application responsibly provides for various improvements that will support integration to the resort corridor. I appreciate the opportunity to share our perspectives and urge your recommendation for the application.
Thank you. Anybody else that would like to speak from the public? Seeing no one, I will close it to the public and open it to the board.
No, sorry, Dan.
You can.
Hi. So, I'm really, really excited about this. I think it's beautiful. I think it's awesome. I have a few concerns about parking, which I think is probably a generational thing. I do have concerns about the flow for rideshare. Could you talk a little bit about, like I know down at Circa they have the Garage Mahal that's kind of designed for rideshare and moving people in and out. Can you talk a little bit about the design that you guys have to get people in and out of rideshare and taxis?
Yeah, my name is Sandy Dean, and I'm with the Athletics. And the rideshare currently is contemplated most likely to occur on the first floor of the garage. That garage is about 3 acres in size, so it's pretty big. We may also explore, you know, rideshare drop-off or pickup locations nearby, but we know we can do it at the garage, and we'll see if we can add to it.
Okay, thank you. That's all I have. Very excited. Thank you.
Okay, I got lots of notes. Diamondback fan here. We won someday. But I loved your mascot, Stompy. That was so cute. Kids were fighting to get to him, as well as a lot of adults, I was surprised. My concerns are, I was on the board, John was on the board when we did Allegiant Stadium. And so there were a lot of public that turned out for that. And I'm surprised we're not seeing it here. And one of the biggest concerns was parking. And they, all the people from Allegiant promised us, don't worry, we'll get parking, it's going to be great. We have all the support from the hotels. There's plenty of places to park. You only have to walk a mile over the 15 to get there. So I'm kind of, you know, they keep coming back for little pieces here and there of parking, but they never did what they promised, which was to come up with a formal parking plan. It's been hit or miss. That they'll come back in and want to just throw some asphalt on a vacant lot somewhere in the area and say, oh, this will be great. This will help with the parking. So I'm a little gun shy because you only have 2,500 parking spaces. And I appreciate the gentleman from the MGM because that's one of my big concerns, is that I agree in the area that it's in, there's a lot of parking. Every time a casino hotel comes in and wants to make a change or grow, we're told all about how nobody parks in their garage because they all take a cab or an Uber, so they don't need any parking, and those parking spaces are sitting there empty. But what you did is, when the game started at Allegiant, all of a sudden the parking space was $100, $150. So it made it impossible for locals to be able, one, afford those tickets, and then the food, and then to have to pay another $100 to park your car. Baseball's a little different in that it's more of a family sport. You take all four of your kids, and your mom and dad, and your grandparents, and everybody gets into it, and you have hot dogs, and it's not, while the prices have gone up, because I paid $121 on Sunday. It was still an affordable event for us to go out to, and we love baseball. I have season tickets for the Diamondbacks already. So I'm very concerned that while you can have a study that says all these places are available, that your neighbors don't create a situation where now it's not reasonable. Now there's, you know, no way to get there. So one of the questions I wrote down was, is the stadium gonna assist in something for transportation, or is that just privatized? So in the case of Allegiant, Station Casinos has done a great job of having a bus system. We can go to Green Valley Ranch, hop on a bus, they'll take you to the stadium, they'll bring you back. It's free, isn't it?
It's $2.
$2. Very reasonable to get somebody there. I'd like to see something like that here. I'd like to see the team or the stadium ownership reach out to locations like that. Go out to, in the case of Summerlin, you've got Ashley Furniture just built a new location. That'd be a great park and ride to bring the people from Summerlin down the freeway to be able to get them there so you don't have all those cars. Out of the 2,500 spaces in the garage, is there the staff and the players have parking in there also? So there's, we're going to be very limited, maybe season ticket holders, the staff, the parking, the Uber that will actually be in the garage.
I can answer for sure. We are anticipating that staff for the ballpark will be off-site. We will manage where that is and bring them. As for the players?
From the athletics. The player parking will be at the ballpark. That's a modest number of stalls. I think there'll be a small amount of staff that also parks there. But we would expect that the bulk of the staff will be off-site.
Okay.
So that the vast majority of those 2,500 will be available for fans.
So now let me go to your point about Game Day Express. So we have met with the RTC to understand how that program works for, I've learned a lot, I thought it was fascinating, how that program works for the Knights and for the Raiders. It's no secret, but as of right now, the RTC is under a funding crisis. They are actively working on legislation that would help them through that. So what our commitment is to them and their commitment is to us, that assuming they can fix their funding issue, that we are in the mix and we'll keep trying to work towards a plan. Should the funding problems get fixed, then we keep working with them because we think it's, you know, it's a great experience for locals. It's very easy. We've all done it.
And let's see. The last thing I had was, and I've mentioned this to you before, is keeping in mind that the locals are contributing to this. And you need to remember that that's your base. You're going to have a lot of tourists that come in that are going to benefit the Strip, not going to benefit us, that are going to come for the opposing teams. But if you want to build a fan base like the one that was so opposed to you coming here in the first place, you have to remember the majority of the people here do not make California dollars. Majority of our citizens make $14, $15 an hour. And it's to be a huge treat to be able to go to a ball game. And so you can do that at the Las Vegas ballpark now. And I'd like to see that continue with the A's so it truly becomes a community stadium and not just another location on the Strip, because we have plenty of those.
Completely noted. One thing that I will point out is the 17 different.
Yeah. Actually, we talked about that once before, and I was really glad you raised that. A couple of things. One, the stadium is designed with a wide array of seating options, and that's intended in part to create different price points. And also, baseball is unique amongst the major league sports in just the volume of seats that are available per season. So I think, you know, what's very often found with baseball teams, and we will seek to bring here, is promotions, group sales, affinity nights, lots of ways to bring people in part because we want to do that for the community, in part because we have a lot of seats to fill as well. So we think that we're going to be able to offer a lot in that area.
I appreciate that.
Thank you.
I'm good. Okay, sure. Yeah, okay. So I'm glad you're bringing it to Las Vegas. I like that the sports, we're getting everything. We're in every category now. My problem is that, and I drove this the other day, where that church is, and where the exit and entrance of this property, I see, like we have at the racetrack. When you go out to the racetrack, it becomes so congested. They make us go right, you sit in the parking lot for 2 hours to get out of that thing. Now we've had a good time. We've enjoyed the evening, but fans shouldn't have to be sitting in a parking garage. The convention hall, we have the same problem because of how many lack of exits there are. So my problem is, why have we not designed the property to utilize Tropicana for a flow of traffic? Why are we putting all the congestion on the back of this property to where that exit is so limited to movement? And even though we've done the study and I see that you've made it more flowing, I just feel like that is one of my biggest issue. And then I'll let you, and then my second is, she brought up the bus transportation. I think it's very important that even though the MGM has offered like garages, I don't believe that other commercial projects should be burdened for parking for another commercial project. And I'll take, for instance, we have other properties that are little and tiny homes that they're converting, and we fight them for every parking spot. And even though they only have 1,000 square feet, we make them put 4 or 5 because, and it doesn't need it, but that's what it is. So for me, to do lack of parking because we don't have the property or we didn't design it correctly, to me, that it seemed like we're putting a burden on other commercial properties. So I'm kind of like on the of that. I wish we could have done a better design with utilizing the property to where we had more of a flow for people coming and going, and they don't have to sit there to get out after they've had a great time at the game. And it is local, so they want to get home and they're in a hurry, and you know, they're not ready to go back to the casino and their hotel rooms on a cat, you know. I Uber and take RTC everywhere when I do these things. I love it, so I hope that that works out. I hope they get the funding. But that's my major concern on this project. You got anything?
Did you want me?
Oh, you can, yeah. So I was, I thought, oh, no, you know, it just, you kind of answered because it just, it is what it is, and planning will work with you and stuff. It's just, that's my thoughts on the, because you're not going to go say, well, we can move the building and stuff. So that's just what I want you guys to take note of. My concerns is those two things really bother me when you're talking about new development and not designing it from the beginning, knowing the congestion. Just like over at Allegiant, we don't have no parking. I mean, we have to RTC in, you know, to go to the games or whatever, or T-Mobile, you know, and we have to count on the hotels, which she's right. The minute they know there's an event, I pay $65 to park my car. Now, I've already just paid reasonable price for not great seats, but nice seats so I can be there. But I prefer not to have to count on MGM to raise their prices or not. To allow me to park to get to a game. So that's my thing. So if you want to, you can, or it's up to you.
Those are great points. And a couple of things. One is in our early dialogue around traffic, we were encouraged to be cautious about adding traffic to Tropicana. And that is part of what contributed to the main entrance to the resort ballpark down on Reno. A second thing is the redesign of Giles and Reno includes those two lanes going kind of north and east as free-flowing lanes. And Kim, we want to believe that those will mostly remain free-flowing even during games, and that will provide the Shrine of the Most Holy Redeemer their, you know, access to their game on Giles. So we think that that's a pretty good solution. And then the third thing, just on parking, and in particular on resort parking, that's something that we've heard a number of times, and that caused us to go back and kind of look more at what other parking is there. And by our study, not including UNLV property over to the east on Tropicana, we've identified 8,500 non-resort stalls. If you assume those were 40% available, you wind up with, there's a couple that we know are totally available, you wind up with almost 6,000 stalls that are non-resort that are available within walking distance. There's only, we estimate based on Kimmy Horn's analysis that if you use the 2,500 stall garage, largely for fans, there's demand of something like 4,500 more stalls, but we've identified a possible 5,700 non-resort stalls. There's just a lot of parking in the area, and we would expect that that'll have some effect on making the parking more affordable.
Right, and that just kind of backs up what I was saying, is that you're counting on other properties to take on the burden of the properties. It's like saying Disneyland, I'm only going to have so many parking spots, but we're going to let you park throughout the neighborhood or park at the hotel. They have to be responsible for the public coming to the event to be able to house them and park them. So it's just my major concern, because like I said, I've been at the racetrack and sat there 2 hours. I've been at other events and there's no parking and we had to pay. So it's just a major concern. And like she said, I'm hoping this is more of like everybody wants to take their whole family and go. So you're carpooling, which is great. But then if you have one or two cars, then you're taking, it gets overloaded. So that was my main concern.
Can I add one more thing before you go?
Sure.
Because you mentioned something that I want to bring up just as an overall to staff. On the EV parking, that's something that is currently in the code that I'm having issue with, because when I drive my gas car and I go somewhere, I don't expect to get gas when I get there. There's not a gas station at the stadium. There's not a gas station at the grocery store. So why are we having a code that says people have to put these on their private property? Because now you are, in this case, you probably, I'm not thinking, oh, I'll go charge my car while I'm at the baseball game. But if you do it in anywhere, I'm talking just in general, you're inviting the public onto your private property and creating a liability there. And I dealt with the Tesla people, and they'll say, oh, well, we'll indemnify you. Well, that just means once you're in the lawsuit, well, we'll stand up for you, but you're already in the lawsuit. And you didn't want those people in the first place, but your code is saying you have to put these stations on there. And again, you're making those people a special class that those of us driving a gas car don't have, because I don't go to my office expecting to get to fill up my car while I'm there. So, if you're willing to put 75 of them on there, great. I know it's also if you can get an income stream out of it and it's worth it to you, fine. You already have, I'm sure, a huge amount of insurance for liability every time someone steps on the property. But just in general to the staff, I just don't think it's right to have a code where we force people to have to invite that liability. Okay, I'm done with my soapbox.
I'm not going to belabor that subject because I agree. I don't know why we have to have that. So you're going to have 2,500 parking spaces on the property. And you have about half the capacity of Allegiant.
Yes.
And that's all they have, is 2,500 parking spaces.
True.
So are those 2,500 parking spaces going to be for the resort that's going to be built around that?
No. The 2,500 spaces are required to be available for as much as is needed for all event days. If we have an event with 500 people expected, they don't have to hold all 2,500 stalls, mm-hmm. but they have to make available up to 2,500 for all event days. That's baseball events plus any other events as well.
So you'll have additional parking for them, I think.
The resort is...
For the resort.
The resort can use our spaces when we're not using them, but because of the requirement for them to be available for us, they have diminished that for them, and they're going to need to build their own parking to support the resort, which they are planning to do.
Okay. Without blocking the view.
Yeah, we spent 9 months on the master plan last year, well into the late summer, and they have a plan to develop the parking in a way that works with the balance of the development.
So, have you looked into the boring company, or are you going to have an area for them? I don't think you mentioned that in the presentation.
Yes, there is an area that's available for a boring company station, and we're rooting for the success of the boring.
Okay, so that would be another mode for people to get there.
Yeah, it's not entirely in our control, but we would like to have a boring company station, and we have a place that's available.
I don't know how much of a burden it is for the commercial properties around the proposed stadium, considering that people will go there, and I would assume that some of them, at least, will probably spend some money at the MGM or the New York or wherever they're at, right in that area. And it seems to me that being able to get to the arena is a whole lot easier than it is at Allegiant. And T-Mobile seems to get along just fine. I've gone to many of the games there. For the hockey, they don't seem to have that much of a problem. Is that kind of where you're headed with the parking? I mean, you've got much more convenience, you know, for them than what you have.
Until we build it and operate it, you know, we're all going to be making, you know, analyses, but we're really encouraged by the supply that's available and the variety of supply, and what we believe is the supply relative to what we expect the demand to be, and the various other ways that people can get to the ballpark, including walking in by chair, and maybe the boarding company and the monorail and RTC, if that works out. There is, you know, a variety of things behind here that are possible.
So, but getting people in and out of that arena, like the taxis, the Ubers, and Lyft, and what have you, have you given any thought to how you're going to get that traffic in and out? I mean, they're not going to want to sit in line.
Yes. Right now, we know we can have drop-off at our facility. We would expect to have dialogue with neighboring properties in support of those guys also possibly having drop-off and so on. There are some advantages to people in particular having that available on the way in or the way out, because it means that some of those folks may take a stop at that other resort, as the case may be, or perhaps other properties as well.
So if you expand some, I would guess if you put additional lanes in on Reno, and those individuals go east and curve around and go north to Flamingo, your lanes aren't going to be able to go all the way. I mean, you can expand it right there, but what's going to bottleneck it farther on? Because you've got a big motel down there, and you've got a lot of private property very close to the roadway. So I'm just kind of curious how that is going to move traffic.
Does Reno going into Cobalt narrow, and it'll still be two lanes?
Devin Moore with Kinley Horn. This is the traffic study that was mentioned that Jen said that the county has been reviewing for the past number of months. And we did take a look at this. We have created additional capacity to get in and out of this intersection. To your point, ultimately the traffic has to move on Las Vegas Boulevard or move on Tropicana or up Cobalt. There is a county project that is expanding the capacity of Cobalt north of Tropicana. So that's going to help that intersection improve. Some of our traffic mitigations are off-site as well, so at Cobalt, Tropicana, down Mandalay Bay and Las Vegas Boulevard and Reno, in addition to what we talked about, Reno and Giles. And so there are improvements in surrounding as well. We've also had communications with Clark County Department of Aviation and the impacts to their concerns about the airport traffic as well. So the capacity is meant to move traffic as quick as we can off-site. So with every large event that we do here in Las Vegas Boulevard, we're going to have in Las Vegas and in the resort corridor, we're going to have traffic management. We also have a preliminary event management plan that's been reviewed by the county, by Metro, by the fire department, by the Department of Aviation as well. And so we will have some laggers that are out there. We're going to have additional lanage that's going to be assigned for event egress to be able to get people off-site faster, to the point of that Ms. Kimberly made, Chair, that we want to get people off-site faster. That's also going to continue up to Tropicana and Cobalt. For example, one of the recommendations we have there is for a free northbound right. So right now, currently, you have to stop at the signal or stop and turn right on red at that intersection. We'll just take the free right turn lane there, and so we'll be able to push people out. So there are capacity constraints in the system that will have to be managed. And so that's part of the event management process, to have Metro out there to coordinate with RTC FAST to make sure that we're controlling the traffic signals as well, maintaining safety for pedestrians that are out there.
Yeah, I imagine you'll have some reiterations after you get started.
Most certainly.
Okay, that's all I have.
You good?
Yep.
So I think we have a consensus. We're going to go through.
I just want to say I thought it was very well planned out. That's the best I've seen so far for any of the arenas so far.
And they speak from experience. Okay, so if you don't mind, we're going to go through, like, we'll start with the use permit, and then we'll kind of go down through the waivers, and we're kind of all go, okay. Or the we. So I'm going to make a motion to approve use permit for the following recreational facility, live entertainment, advocate, vocational training facility, office, outdoor dining, drinking and cooking, and an outdoor market and mobile food vendor. All in favor?
No, we have to do the whole thing.
Oh, we have to do the whole thing? We can't do each?
No, we have to do the whole thing.
Okay, so we're going.
One application.
Okay, so then we're going to go to the waivers of development standards, the following element. Can I do the motion to approve?
Yeah. Okay. You say your motion to approve.
Okay, the motion to approve waiver of development standards for the following. Eliminate and reduce street landscaping, reduce electrical vehicle charging spaces, reduce loading spaces.
Can you give a number for me?
You want to do one, two?
Okay.
Oh, you want to go down below? I was okay. I can do that. No worries. Okay, so we're gonna go. We're gonna start over with the waiver development standards. We're gonna go number 1A. Eliminate street landscaping along portion of Tropicana Avenue where 10-foot wide landscaping strip is required. Behind attached sidewalk per section 30.04. Item number B, we're going to approve eliminate street landscaping along portion of Las Vegas Boulevard south where 10-foot wide landscaping strip is required behind the attached sidewalk section 30.04. Item number 1C, reduce the width of the street landscaping strip along the portion of Las Vegas Boulevard south of 5 feet where 10 feet wide landscaping strip is required per section 30.04. Item number 1D, we're going to approve reduce the width of the street landscaping strip along portion of Reno Avenue and 3 feet where 5 feet landscaping strip is required of each side of the detached sidewalk per section 30.04. This was where I was going to ask the board. I'm going to approve 2A and 2B, eliminate electrical vehicle EV capability charging spaces, 1930 spaces are required per Title 3004, and reduce the number of electrical vehicles installed charging spaces to 75. But we're going to, if my board doesn't have a problem, to eliminate them 100%. Instead of reducing them to 75 spaces where 230 spaces are required. Waiver development number 3, we're going to approve reduce the number of loading spaces to 3 spaces where 39 spaces are required per table 30.04. And item number 3A, allow temporary construction activity to occur off-site where only on-site temporary construction activities are allowed per section 30.03. And then we're going to item number 5A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and H. A is reduce the, we're going to approve all five. I can just do A, B, C.
There's no changes.
It was just the, okay. So then we're going to approve 5A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and H. And I think that's it, right?
And the
oh, I got to go to the.
And then you approve the design review.
Design, and then we're going to approve the design review for recreational facility ballpark at 35.11 acres in a CR commercial resort.
That's right.
Okay. Yeah. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? And it goes. And you know where you go next. I know that.
Thank you.
I appreciate you all coming out.
Thank you.
Thank you for all your information.
Thank
and look
you.
Forward to attending one of the games.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we have, item number 6 is the applicant here for 6 and 7. Thank you for staying and hanging out.
That was exciting. I didn't expect to see you today, so that was very cool.
I'm going to read him into record. Okay, we are doing, is it okay if I read them together?
Absolutely.
Together?
Yes.
Okay. Item number VS250132 Rebel Land Development LLC vacant abandonment of a portion right-of-way being Flamingo Road located between Paradise Road, Howard Hughes Parkway within Paradise. Item number 7, UC 25031 0133 Rebel Land Development LLC use permit for the following: office and gas station waiver development standards for the following. Number one, reduced driveway approach distance. Number two, reduced driveway departure distance. Three, allow an attached sidewalk. And four, reduced driveway throat depth. Design review for commercial development on 1.08 acre in a CR commercial resort zone with the airport surrounding overlay, generally located on the southwest corner of Flamingo Road and Paradise within Paradise. Now we're here from
you.
All right,
thank you. Good evening, my name is Tom McLeister, McLeister. I'm here on behalf of the applicant. Address 1904 Tomahawk Drive, Henderson, Nevada, 89074. I apologize, this site plan is very, very busy with all the information that we have worked through throughout the process, but you guys are probably familiar with the project. There's currently a Rebel gas station and C-store on the corner of Flamingo and Paradise. We are completely tearing down what is there now and rebuilding a new C-store with some offices for Rebel and Penobi Oil, as well as the just relocating the existing fuel canopy and pumps. We have a few areas where we have to vacate along Flamingo for the detached sidewalk. That was one of the requirements. Waiver development standards, we have some driveway approaches that don't meet code, but we have pushed them as far back as we can on the site, both to the west and to the south. So staff will recommend approval for that. We have some throat depth items that come into play at the entrances there that we work through. And then the design review for the actual structure itself. So, as everybody else did, I'm going to put a pretty picture too, and you guys can answer the questions. So.
I don't have anything. Oh, yeah, we're there. Are you finished? I'm sorry. Okay, now that you're, I'm opening up to the public, if there's any here who'd like to speak on this item. Seeing no one, we're closing it to the public and opening it to the board. Yeah, if you want to say something.
I remember when you came, this application's been before us before.
It has.
And the county was absolutely not, you're not going to do anything. So you've come a long way.
Yes, it's been a long way.
I was in support of you back then.
Oh, great.
I didn't agree with what the county said, so I'm sorry you had to start over. No, I think everything seems to fall in line now, and you worked really hard, so I have no issues.
I'd make a motion to approve the staff preliminary conditions.
Which one?
On 6 and 7?
On 6 and 7.
There's a motion on the floor to approve items 6 and 7 with staff preliminary conditions. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? There you go.
Thank you. Item number 1 was trail.
Is.
Post trail.
Yep, I'm looking to see. Is the applicant for number item number 1 here?
Motion to return to the board.
There's a motion to return to the board on March 25th. All in favor?
I believe this is the second.
Hold on.
Hey.
We're holding to find out if it's.
If we can.
I don't remember. I remember the name, but I remember the, I can't.
Properties 0079 was a no-show return to March 11th Paradise Avenue per last agenda. This is their second no-show.
They'll miss the planning commission if we make them come back.
That's true. Yes. So,
I can make the motion to deny it.
Okay.
It's
well,
but this is the thing. The main authority you see, they have a motion for denial. They never appear for you because you can just possibly approve them, especially if they have a public consent agenda.
So, should we just.
If they hold it, then that way, Florida goes to the planner,
So I'm going to make a
motion to return.
Okay, so there's a motion to return. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed?
And your return date is
25. I apologize.
Is it yep. Return date?
Okay. Is there any? The last thing, what do we got?
Last thing is general business.
General business. Is there any general business?
No general business.
Okay. And then
we're general. I know you
comment. Oh, I did. Okay, ready? Comments by the general public is a period devoted to the comments by the general public about matters relevant to the board and council jurisdiction will be held. No discussion, action, or vote will be taken at this agenda item. Comments will be limited to 3 minutes. Please step up to the speaker podium and clearly state your name, address, and please spell your last name for the record. If any member of the board council wishes to extend the length of the presentation, this will be done by the chairman, chairperson, or board council by majority vote. Is there anybody here that would like to speak?
I make a comment, Blanca.
Sure.
I'd like to see if we can get an update on the RTC and the funding issue. We were involved with the work they're going to do down Maryland Parkway, and so I think as a board, we'd really like to know what's going on with the RTC for future projects.
I know they're still working on Maryland Parkway.
Yeah, if that's possible.
But I'm just, so funding for those kind of projects are federally funded.
Mm-hmm.
How it runs, yeah.
So just so you know, just one problem doesn't have anything to do with budget of the campus program. So I will have to see if they've got something that they can.
This is a public hearing.
Yeah, but they can just provide information to the board in regards to their RTC budget status on the campus. The campus is a completely different program than all of the RTC stuff.
Okay.
Anything
else?
Okay.
We're good.
Next meeting.
Next meeting is scheduled for March 25th, 2025. Can I get a motion?
Move to adjourn.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Fun.
Fun, fun, fun.
See, if I go back to the